This episode of the Rad Dads podcast is brought to you by the all-new
Hubble H6.
A wagon that gets you from A to B.
And possibly from C to D.
There we go. That's an official Rad Dads endorsement. They've given us the H6 to cruise around and to do cool stuff in, and we want to say thanks to them. And if you're looking for a solid vehicle, go and check out the Havel team, and they can help you out.
It's definitely got my vote as a vehicle good for the family, and good, like I say, good to get from A to B.
Let's get into this week's episode of the Radical Daticals.
We thought we'd start this week because, you know, last week went so well when we were on the road and driving, and I managed to avoid any other vehicles. We thought we'd, you know, do it again.
Oh gosh, I'm gonna take a gap. Driving and talking is not a good mix, but we'll just let Greg get around the roundabout and then he will intro. You're all right. Just push your way in. Good.
Right.
There we go.
We're good.
What's happening in your world, Greg?
Oh man, it's kind of busy, but not. We're in the post race kind of BMX wind down. We're going into a little bit of hibernation. Life returns to kind of normal, but with that comes all sorts of plans to make next season bigger and badder and better, and we've got, you know, plans for the T Buckley stuff to grow and merch, and yeah, so it's kind of on one hand it's quietening down, but on the other hand it's I guess now the home grind starts rather than the grind on the road of getting everybody around the place.
We were talking when you were on your trip, and kind of an interesting thing that I thought I wanted to bring up with you on the podcast was kind of two things. One was, how do you readjust when you're home? Because being away, it's like the routine changes. Everyone has unlimited amount of takeaways and all these things, and then you get home and you've got to kind of work out how to recalibrate. And secondly, this idea of kind of teaching your kids how to lose gracefully and getting lessons out of it, and how parents have to navigate this in real time. You know, I mean, do you just want to unpack a little bit, Greg, how the weekend went with the racing and stuff like that?
Yeah, it was awesome. Obviously, it was Molly's first time at Nationals. It was Jack's second time, and he's also been to Worlds in the meantime. So, we kind of had this dynamic of Molly was just chomping at the bit, weeks out. All she could do was read last year's program front to back, back to front, roundabout, and she knew absolutely every last little detail. And that's her personality as well. Whereas Jack was a little bit more nonchalant. He'd kind of been there, done that, but you know, he was excited, but in a different kind of way. So we cruised down there. Molly was up first. Very proud of her. She managed to make semi-finals, and she was sitting on the gate, and she sort of said to herself, if I do what I normally do, I'll come fifth and not make finals. I don't want that to happen. I need to up my game here. And she did, and she ended up coming third in her semi, which put her in front of the kid that ended up being ended four. But for her, that was her final. That was her mountain to climb, her challenge to overcome. And by the time the finals rolled around, which was pretty quick after the semis, she was pretty gassed. And she admitted after coming in from her final that she basically sat up on the gate and thought, well, you know, I get in BMX, if you make the finals, you get an NZ plate. And she'd got her goal. Her goal was an NZ plate, and she knew that she could come last in the final and it didn't matter. As it turned out, unfortunately, one other girl crashed, so she actually managed to squeeze into NZ7, and she was stoked. She was absolutely over the moon, and it was good because it was goal set, goal achieved. Jack rode absolutely phenomenally all day. You know, it was a track that was always going to be hard. He's one of the littler kids in his age group, and it was a track that was designed for big powerhouse kids that had heaps of horsepower, but he rode really well. And the final rolled around, and he got caught up in an ax accident on the first straight, which kind of pushed him back into the pack a little bit. And then he worked really, really hard to get back into fourth, and he was trying to make a pass on third, which would have put him on the podium. And he just was trying too hard, and he cut in on a corner and washed out and actually crashed. And so that bumped him back to sixth. And then, as much as it was frustrating because he'd actually beaten the kid that had come in first, you know, that whole age group, on any given day, one could beat the other. It's so close in the racing, so exciting. On one hand, he was incredibly disappointed, but he got up and he knew that that was racing. That was the risk that he took, and he knew that he would much rather have tried to make that pass on the last corner than not and regretted where he would have come. He knew that NZ4 from a mediocre place was meant less to him than NZ6 having tried. So that was kind of the way the weekend went, and we had a lot of learning out of that. But yeah, it was cool. It was really good. It was really, really good.
I think what's interesting is, you know, you unpack a lot there, right? And there's a lot of kind of things happening, a lot of moving parts, and these things are simply not simple, right? And I think what's interesting is I start thinking about, you know, how we get kids to engage in sport. And there's a big thing that talks about participation, and then that's the win. But actually, that's only part of it, right? It's a bit more than just participating. It's understanding that you know, you have a shot at winning, you have a shot at losing, that, you know, you're participating as well. And I'm just keen to kind of, for us to unpack a little bit, to see if we can't just put a bit of scope on this idea of what we're actually doing when we get kids to engage in sport. Because in some ways they're practicing life, aren't they? They're practicing how far to push it, how are my emotions. And I don't want the goal to just be, you participated, you get a certificate.
Yeah.
Like, that would be like saying, okay, you're 21, here's your key. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's definitely not like that, eh?
Oh, and I think, and every kid's different, but I think, you know, like, and now from our perspective, like, we don't need to let Jack or Molly or any of the kids get passionate about riding their bike. They already are. And I think that's where you've got to almost have to, with sport, I think there's almost a little bit of a two-tier thing going on. If it's about getting your kid active and out of the house and kind of just having fun and developing a love for something new, and absolutely it is, of course it's about participation, it's about getting out there, getting months, getting, you know, the blood flowing and having some something else to do. But I think every kid reaches a point where, like, I don't need to convince any of the kids to ride their bikes. They don't need any more encouragement to be passionate about riding. If anything, we're trying to hold them back because they're riding so much. So then it moves on to, okay, cool. Well, if we're going to do this and if we're going to invest all of this time and money and effort, it's got to be bigger than just winning races. Otherwise, for me, it's kind of it's a bit of a fruitless exercise. It's got to be more dynamic than that. It has to be in winning races or in setting goals and pursuing them, we learn something. And so, yeah, for us it is. It's very much about going, how do we develop a positive dialogue with the kids about what's happening? How do we talk them through the highs and lows? And how do we step back far enough as parents to actually let them fail, which is really, really difficult sometimes. Mm. In a race setting where they might not necessarily get the result that they want, whether it's them going to try something and them hucking over a jump and coming up short and crashing, there's an element, and we've talked about it before, there's that consequence muscle that almost needs to be flexed. And I think for me, at least, and I'm sure you're the same way, I think it's that muscle of consequence is ultimately the byproduct of what we're trying to work out when we're doing sport with our kids. It's, if you do that, what happens? Let's talk about that. If we do this, what happens? Let's talk about that. If you say that to that person in that setting, what happens? And it's just I think it's an awesome opportunity to kind of marry the passion that kids have for just being active and burning off energy, and then giving them that opportunity to reflect on that and reflect on their life.
When I hope, and I don't know if we do it, but I hope people acknowledge all of these things when we're making these decisions. It's not just about burning the energy down so they're not little terrors running around home, right? We're supposed to be teaching them stuff. And I had a moment this week, which I'm keen to pick your brains and the Rad Dads community. I heard from one of my kids that Tiggy is banned at school. Wow. And okay, so what I'll challenge myself to do is try and understand why, and I should ask some more questions. I'm not judging anyone, particularly the school, but it is in line with other things that I've heard in the past about we're not allowed to climb trees, you know, because of liability and all these things. And actually, I don't want a concrete jungle for my kids where the only thing they're allowed to do is, you know, go on mathletics because it keeps them quiet. Like, I want them to understand that if you fall off the playground, you land on bark this time, but do it in the real world, you're landing on concrete, you know? Yeah. And I just don't know if we're always... If we always have... I think we say we have the best interests of our kids at mind, but I don't know if we always really think through that when you take something away, like an opportunity to lose, like an opportunity to fail, that you actually take a bit more away than just that moment. You know, you're missing a chance to really get these little people to experience what life's like, but without all of the, you know, all of the weighing down that actually adult life has.
Yeah, well, and I think, again, it comes back to that fundamental sort of worldview that says that, you know, what is happiness? If we're trying to, I guess, nurture and encourage our kids towards a life of happiness and fulfillment, that doesn't look like smiles all around 24/7, everybody's happy, everybody doesn't get hurt. It's like, that's just not reality. And again, it's not a school of hard knocks kind of thinking, or it's not a tough one up, take some concrete pills kind of attitude, but it's like, again, you know, you think about their little brains and the, you know, the motor neuron receptors and what have you that are firing off when good, bad, and indifferent things happen within the context of a day, and the colours of that picture that it paints in their brain. And then you think about, well, actually, you know, fluorescent yellow, as bright as it might be, it's actually not necessarily a particularly pleasant colour to look at. You know, and if you think about our life experiences, we want the shades and the nuance and the tones and the light, the dark, and the everything in between, because it paints that much more compelling picture of the way life is, I think, at least supposed to be. So I'd be fascinated to understand the rationale from the school as to why Tiggy's been taken out of play. And again, I guess it's that whole thing, you know, I think I've mentioned it before. My dad is a type 1 diabetic, so it's pancreatic failure rather than, you know, type 2 from being necessarily overweight or whatever. But one of the byproducts that he has is his feet are hypersensitive and can often be subject to all sorts of ailments. And it's kind of, I guess I look at it, and it might be a weird analogy to use, but it's kind of going, he gets cuts on his feet, so we keep putting plasters on the cuts on his feet. But it's his diabetes that's exacerbating the condition of his feet in order that it gets cut. And it's like, how often do we treat the cut, not look at why his feet are in this state that they are in the first place? And it's like, you know, if the school's dealing with the cause of the cause of the issue, and they're not just putting a band-aid on the outside, and it kind of checks out, I'm cool with that. But if it's a knee-jerk, we've got to just stem the bleeding somehow, I'm not necessarily for that, if that makes sense.
I think two things. 100%, that's a good analogy. And secondly, I think they are trying to stem the bleeding because they have these kids for finite times. And it's about long-term survival for them, right? Yeah. And I'm not saying, like, yeah, picket fences and... not picket fences, pitchforks in schools.
No.
I'm just saying that I want to talk about this stuff, and we've got to find a way to be able to talk about it without just calling people out.
Yeah.
It's like, we've said it on this show before, they spend a bunch of time at school.
Yeah.
And they're not just there to learn algebra and all the other good things that we learn.
Yeah.
They're there to learn how to act socially, and that's what detention is. You've been a dork, you know, go sit in a room for a while and think about it.
And I guess also with all of that, I think it's also really important that if we are going to call this stuff into question, we have to be part of the solution, not the problem. Because I think, again, when you're dealing with emotions and people are on various ends of the spectrum as we try and provide this experience for kids that's positive and uplifting and whatever, it's like you say, it's really easy to get the index finger out and start pointing. But unless you're prepared to be a part of the solution by lending your hand to the pump, whether at home or whether, you know, at school or whatever, I think that's kind of, I don't know, my attitude's always been, you know, that's your currency in having permission to speak up. And I think I hope that part of this is part of that currency, and then it's like, how then we take that to the next level and actually get involved to go, all right, well, what's the root cause here? Why can't my kids play tiggy? How do I play a part in remedying that, even if it's at a micro level? I don't think it's right, but I also know that I can't just criticize. I've actually got to actively offer myself in a resource scarce environment, offer myself as part of the solution, rather than it sort of, you know, everybody wants to call each other out and then just escalate and get so far away from the issue that we lose sight of what's actually going on.
Well, and part of the solution could be, let's get our rad dads in the comments, sending us messages. What do you guys think about this? You know, it's like, we talk about nuance. Are we in this world where we want to see different shades of all these colours? Or do we agree that schools need to just make things a bit more black and white so they can get through their day? I don't know. Maybe it's like a part broken up week. Because, you know, having all these colours means it takes resources and time, right? Maybe it's like a Friday where you can climb a tree and do some stuff, you know, and we'll control the chaos by Monday, Wednesday, Tuesday, you know, Thursday, or something like that. I don't know, but I definitely know more people talking about it constructively and saying, I'm highlighting something, here's a possible solution, is way better than either finger pointing or no one saying nothing, which is, I think, where we stand, Greg. No one says nothing. And nothing can happen. Like, that's what I want for Rad Dads. It's like, say something, man.
Yeah.
Because this thing is ticking, we're all ticking along. Life's moving.
Yeah.
And as soon as you know it, we're all not here. And our kids are the ones who say, who think to themselves, Dad, why the heck didn't you say something?
Yeah.
I needed to climb trees, man.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if I'm not allowed to do it at school, take me down the road and climb it with me, you know?
Yeah.
Something like that. Okay, I think we should wrap it up. Greg, any final thoughts before we kind of end this ship for another week?
No, I just think it's, let's keep up the discussion. Let's keep talking about how we can get engaged and celebrate this diversity that is good, bad, and indifferent, guys and girls working together and I guess embracing the muscle of consequence. I'm just being approached by my little fella, speaking of which, she's...
Wind the window down, see if we can get him on.
Alright.
See what he says.
Hi, Dad.
Hey, man, what's happening?
Hey, do you want to say hello to everyone on the podcast?
Hi!
We were just talking about your riding.
Jump in, man. Come in here, bud.
Oh, we're getting the man in.
Getting the man himself.
We were telling everyone how you're an awesome rider. Do you enjoy riding?
Yeah.
Jack, let me ask you a question. Should kids be allowed to climb trees?
I don't know.
Do you like climbing trees?
Yes, but not very much.
Okay, and should kids... Do you know what tag is, the game tag?
Yeah.
Do you think it's a fun game?
Yeah.
Are you allowed to play it at school?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. You go to a good school then. Hey, tell me one cool thing. For all the dads listening, tell them one cool thing. What's something cool?
That every year you can try something new. That's
a good thing, man. All right, there you go, dads. Every year, try something new. What a good rule. All right, take it easy, everyone. We'll see you next time on Rad Dads. Hey, Jack, can you say peace out, dads?
Peace out, dads.